there. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly discussion on antidepressants and the issues surrounding them.
Hello, this is James. Welcome to episode 23 of Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly podcast discussing antidepressants and mental health. This week, we have an interview with David. David talks about his own experiences with the mental health care system and also his sanguine view of antidepressant drugs. David, thank you so much for talking with me. I wanted to start really by just talking a little about your own experiences and how you feel about antidepressant treatment.
It is important to be kind of open-minded when it comes to antidepressant medication. And, you know, I mean, like a lot of people who suffer from depression, one of the things I do very well is I'm really hard on myself. So, yeah. You know, and one of the things is that I'm always going to be telling myself, I don't want to be reliant on medication. You know, I want to live medication free in a lot of the, I don't tend to take painkillers very often. You know, it's the same reason I'm quite a stubborn person when it comes to stuff like that. Yeah. So I resisted seeking any help at all in the first place for a couple of reasons. One was that I, you know, I didn't want to have a medical record that said I was suffering from depression. I mean, that was a very real thing when I was a young man.
Yeah.
And I think it was a valid thing, actually. I think it's less so now. It's been destigmatized massively over the last 20 years, which is a good thing. But at the time, partly because of my misunderstanding, but part of the reason was because I didn't want to go down the road of having to be reliant, firstly, on other people and then on medication. And I was offered antidepressant medication quite early. And I know it was when I lived on the Brixton Road. So I can place it about, you know, probably about 1998. And I was horrified. Like, so what, the GP, why are you offering me? I've come to you. I'm feeling a bit down occasionally. And you're saying go into medication? Surely not. And he was a good GP, you know, he was very good in lots of other ways. And I was a bit horrified at that point. And I resisted taking any medication, even when I was becoming severely depressed in episodes for a long, long time. But what I found is that, and I'm fully aware of the placebo effect and all the clinical trials, etc. But I found that I do well when I'm taking antidepressant medication. That's mainly almost exclusively been SSRIs. And it has tended to help me. I mean, my best times of all have come either during or following periods of medication and therapy. But at the moment, I'm not in therapy. I'm just taking paroxetine, which is an SSRI. I'm taking quite a serious dose of that because that's where I am at the moment. And I'm not trying to reduce it. I'm just trying to stabilize, but I'm actually doing really well at the moment. I was just going through my data. I am a data person. That's my job.
Yeah. Okay.
And I've got extensive records that go back to 2003. Some of them are scanned paper records, but things have moved on now. It's all on Excel now. And it, actually, I thought I'll take 10 minutes just to go through my data and remind myself of my journey. And, you know, I didn't finish it in, there's such a lot more in there than I'd remembered.
Yeah.
And I actually hadn't remembered how often I tried to withdraw from medication. I thought I tried a couple of times, but actually the data says that I've done it a lot more times.
And David, what prompted those attempts to withdraw? Was it that you wanted to be medication free, or was it that you were in a better place in your life? What was going on to make you think about stopping?
Well, as I answer every question, it was a combination of both of those things. It's never simple, is it? But
no.
It was always a combination. It was always when I was doing well. So I'm never minded to reduce my medication when I'm having regular periods of depression. So, you know, I think usually it was when I've gone about 6 months without a serious depressive episode, that tends to be the pattern.
Yeah.
And I've had a few examples of that. And I'm actually in that place at the moment, which is quite interesting, but I'm not thinking about withdrawing. But yes, it was always a common, I have a general feeling that comes and goes, but it's always there, that I do not want to take antidepressant medication for my whole life. So that's always present. And that becomes stronger if I've been well for about 6 months, no major depressive episodes in 6 months. Then I do start to think, well, you know, I want to take this crutch away. What am I like without the medication? And it's not because I suffer from major side effects. You know, I get some side effects, and I notice that the most when I try to withdraw.
Yeah.
I get the I don't know if you are you familiar with the SSRI withdrawal, the kind of the shocks in your head and things like that,
yeah.
The feeling that it's quite difficult to describe, but it's a little bit like when you've bumped your head, the jarring feeling or a sort of electric shock thing. It's very noticeable, but it's, you know, once you get used to it, it's not actually that unpleasant. You know, it's just like, well, I can feel the withdrawal effect. So something is happening, and there are other side effects, you know, that are very noticeable with SSRIs. You definitely, it has an impact on your sex drive, which I think a lot of people notice. And I mean, that's an interesting, it's kind of off subject a little bit, but nobody really knows how they work. But they definitely somehow desensitize you, assuming they do work and it's not a pure placebo effect. And I know some people say it is pure placebo, but somehow I think, and you know, this is a gross generalization, but I think people who are vulnerable to depression tend to be quite sensitive people. And I certainly fall into that category. I mean, I'm sure my wife would laugh at that, but I definitely was quite a sensitive and withdrawn child. And I do think I'm quite kind of, you know, sensitive to what people say or situations I'm in. They have a big effect on me. I can't just brush things off. And I think part of what medication does is it desensitizes you a little bit. It makes you a little, and even though I guess I don't notice that, I notice that when I'm taking medication, I have less tendency to get depressed.
Yeah.
And I don't really notice it, but deep down, I guess there must be something. You know, even when I'm taking medication, I'm not subdued in any way. It's not like I'm, you know, the classic, the sort of one flew over the cuckoo's nest sort of idea that you're kind of drugged to be a zombie. I don't think they act like that at all. And you know, definitely, I mean, it's difficult to tell over your life how, as you change, I'm a much more confident person than I used to be, and I'm not withdrawn or subdued. I'm quite outgoing. I'm quite optimistic when I'm not depressed, obviously. And I don't feel like I'm held back in any way by the medication.
Thank you, and I agree. I think your observation about sensitivity and proneness to depression is an excellent one. And there are definitely people out there who feel that without the antidepressants they couldn't get on with their lives, and whether that's placebo or real effect is unimportant to them. David, I just wanted to ask, around what age was it that you started antidepressants for the first time?
Oh, and I've just checked this, actually. So it was in 2003.
Yeah.
So I was born in 71, so that would make me 32.
Yep.
And I went to see this dreadful private psychiatrist who shall remain nameless. And it was unbelievable. He treated me like I was an idiot. I genuinely didn't know what was wrong with me, because I was getting these short periods of intense depression lasting for less than two weeks, often just sort of 5 days. And I couldn't find this pattern, although I now know that that pattern is, you know, the patterns are very different with different people, and quite a lot of people get what I get. But I couldn't find it. I was reading all the books and looking up, and they were all describing longer periods of depression. So I was like, well, what's happened to me? You know, this doesn't fit. So I went to see him in that kind of frame of mind, like, can you help me explain what's going on? And I'm sure I said to him, completely self-obsessed, and you know, but he made it very clear, well, what you've got is completely normal depression. Stop banging on about it, take some drugs.
Okay.
I found it deeply, deeply unhelpful in terms of his dismissiveness, and probably compounded by the fact I was paying for it. But so he made me feel very small, but he did recommend cognitive behavior therapy, and I had a good therapist for a time, and all I guess that I was, and he put me in something called nifazodone, which made me drowsy and didn't make me feel worse. It certainly didn't make me feel any better. So I stopped taking it. I then just thought, this is ridiculous, and went to my GP, who was very helpful, a different one from the one I'd first been to, and just said, listen, if you're starting to take this, I'll probably put you on fluoxetine. That was in 2003. That's quite a long time ago now, isn't it?
Well, it's very similar to my own experience. And like you, I went to a private psychiatrist, and I was desperate to get back to work as quickly as possible. And like you, the psychiatrist played down my seeking to know what was happening and was very strong about the drug therapy.
I think it's special because you always think that people who go into these professions are going in because they have a huge amount of compassion and empathy themselves, but it's an absolute lottery who you end up talking to. And you know, a GP completely untrained in psychiatry can actually be a much more, going to see that person can be a much more fruitful experience in my opinion than going to see an eminent psychiatrist. But I try not to be judgmental about these things. It could be that actually what that psychiatrist did to me, which was kind of send me away and tell me to kind of get on with it, was actually quite helpful in the end. Who knows what you know? And it could be that somebody being very kind of nice to you is not actually that helpful. I mean, I'm always very careful to come to a judgment about something. Do I know that my GP care, which has been compassionate, slightly not very well informed, but kind of, you know, that they're really nice people and they really look out for me and it's kind of, you know, just for their point of view is whatever you need, as opposed to psychiatrists who would just kind of sort of say, get on with it. And yeah, I see 10 like you every day. You know? Yeah. I don't know which work better. It feels like the GP would be better. But yeah, I have to say that did feel like a bad experience. But, and the other thing is, obviously I was at that point, I was not reconciled at all with the idea that I was mentally ill.
Yeah.
So I was still in the phase of what the hell is happening to me, but mine was more of a kind of creeping thing.
Okay.
So I've always had, it's work related with me. I have this very unhealthy relationship, or I had a very unhealthy relationship with work. And, you know, it could always be something deeper, something underneath, but I think it largely stemmed from becoming very anxious through work.
Yeah.
By having unrealistic expectations of what I could achieve and then just working myself to the ground and my body reacting by becoming depressed, because that's what the human body does if it's put into fight or flight mode for extended periods and can't get back out of it. So I think I've just kind of got this vulnerability that pops up when I put myself under certain sorts of pressure. It's largely, I'm afraid, it's quite boring. You know, I don't have a better story about, you know, I mean, this is an awful thing to say, a better story, but, you know, a difficult childhood or you know, a series of things that happened to me, or, you know, bereavements or these sort of things. It was just kind of, you know, pressures of work, pressures I was self under.
That's interesting in itself, though, isn't it? Because one of the reasons we struggle to understand depression is that it doesn't always affect people that you may expect to be prone to it, and it doesn't always happen to people who have experienced huge trauma in their lives.
Have you read Cantifer's book? It's called something like Depression, the Curse of the Strong. It's a bit far-fetched. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I like what he's tried to do, which is to say that actually depression is the result of strength, not weakness. It's people who are too hard on themselves. I think he overemphasizes it slightly, but I did like the idea that he tried to sort of make that case. And you do see that, you know, it's people who are too hard on themselves. I'm sure that's what you do, because it's not, I mean, the external circumstances contribute, but it's in the same way as somebody who's being tortured in a South American prison, some people don't become depressed in that. So it's the way you'd think that would be the most challenging circumstance, but, you know, some people can stay positive in that circumstance. And it is very strange, because I don't get depressed when I'm under the stress of an emergency. It tends to be when it's a sort of long-term thing that's going over and over in my mind, and as I say, usually work-related. But, you know, the conclusion I've come to is stop trying to work it out, really, because it's actually stressful trying to work it out, why it happens, when it happens. All you can do is sort of broadly think, well, I'm vulnerable when I'm working too hard. If I've, you know, had a virus or something like that, I'm run down anyway. If I'm not sleeping properly,
yeah,
all these things add to the, you know, and if it's really busy at home and a few things go wrong at the same time. So, you know, that's where it's vulnerable. So trying to avoid that situation as far as it's possible.
Thank you. And David, I just wanted to ask, how is your situation now in regards to your depression? And do you use anything else besides medication to support you?
Yeah, so happy to, and very much I use other things to support myself. My situation is very good. It's good at the moment. Things are going well. I'm still taking the medication, as I said, but I haven't had a major depressive episode since the middle of last year. Yeah, so over 6 months. I'm continuing to take the medication, partly just to finish the kind of the experience of withdrawal. You know, previously I've had sort of 6 months without, and then I've kind of tapered it down very slowly, usually over about 6 months. But then I've got depressed a couple of times afterwards and just thought, well, I might as well have the medication because being depressed is the worst thing in the world, and I'll take whatever I can get. And once I did a bit more cold turkey, and I ended up being off work when I did that. So I wouldn't recommend that to anyone. To support myself, I did some mindfulness. I did a mindfulness course a few years ago, and I find that kind of approach to things. I mean, everything's mindfulness now, isn't it? But the general principles of that, of trying to come back to the moment and try to kind of live in your body, in your whole body, not in your head and in your thoughts. That kind of thing's good, and that as a sort of general principle. But I did try meditation, mindfulness-based meditation after that. It was good, and I did do that for quite a long time, but I've tended to focus on yoga, which goes alongside that. So there was kind of a yoga part of that, and I'm now doing two yoga classes a week, and I try to do some every day. Yeah. And I find that a very good way to kind of, I was going to say relax. You know, it's not just about relaxing, it's about sort of, you know, focusing and centering and trying to sort of take myself out of my thoughts, particularly my negative thoughts. I've had various periods of therapy. I haven't had any therapy for a couple of years, but that tended to be CBT. So I've had that, and my therapist, who I actually met on the mindfulness course when I did it back then, the most recent therapist, he's a brilliant guy. He was interested in doing something called schema therapy next. But I haven't actually gone down that route, which is about sort of tackling the underlying issues that cause the vulnerability. I might be wrong, but I kind of feel I don't need that at the moment because I'm in a good place. So it isn't broken at the moment, so not really fixing it. Well, he's very good, so I'm sure it would be a positive experience with me, and he would be very careful. And I don't mind, to begin with, when I first had therapy, I just didn't want to talk about my background and my childhood. It's like, what's that got to do with anything?
Yeah.
Which is obviously a bit closed-minded. I think I was hugely frustrated. I remember my first therapist, and she was great, but I imagine she used to get really quite frustrated with my kind of... I just kept asking her, why is this happening? And she's like, well, let's not focus on the why. Let's just try and do some useful things. And I just remember kind of impasse in the sessions. I think it's quite funny when I look back. I should write to her really and just say I'm doing okay and thanks for all the help you gave, just to close that off. I mean, the other thing is loads of exercise. I cycle a lot. I try and cycle everywhere I can go. But that's good. Generally being outside, cycling, I play tennis and squash and I run. I do something called park run on a Saturday morning, which I cannot recommend enough to people. All over the country, and in fact, all over the world now, and in a park near you, basically, because it's everywhere, there are these great people who organize a free 5K run. And you can walk it if you want. There's no pressure. And they do a great thing where you print out a barcode and you scan it at the end and they'll give you your time as well. It's hugely social, you know. So if somebody's feeling isolated, then it would be such a good thing to do because somebody will, if you say you go along, you know, it's a 5K walk, somebody will walk around with you, you know, one of the volunteers, and make sure you know the course and stuff like that. And you meet, you can't help but meet and chat to people just because you're turning up and busting a gut on a Saturday morning. So that's brilliant. And the yoga, as I said, is good. So kind of that's what I'd recommend to people. And it's not easy if you're depressed, but exercise that involves some sort of social interaction is a winner.
That's great. Thank you. And it's clear from the interviews that I've done that there's a very big positive effect on people's mental health and well-being from changing their diet, getting more fresh air and exercise, being more sociable. Those things have a much bigger positive impact on depression and anxiety than anything else they've tried. And David, I just wanted to ask you, I'm interested in your perspective. If you had a colleague or a friend or a family member who was considering taking an antidepressant, I wondered what your advice would be.
Oh, I've been in this situation, so I can talk from experience. It would be very much whatever feels right for you. But I have said to people who were saying, you know, I really don't want to take medication, you know, I want to be, I disagree with taking medication. You know, I have sort of essentially come out to those people and say, well, you know, I take medication, and you shouldn't feel there's a stigma attached to it, or that it's a negative thing. It works for some people. It doesn't work for other people. So go into it with open eyes. Don't rush into it, because the bit at the other end, like, there isn't a plan. That there's a plan to get onto it. There's a plan if it's something short term, and, you know, somebody feels better and then comes off it, and that's fine. It's kind of like, there's a plan if it's a one off, but if you have a recurring problem, there is no plan either for the NHS or anyone else involved in it, and least of all the companies supplying the medication, because they want to keep selling it. Yeah. There isn't a plan to come off at the other end. So it's a bit like getting on a train, and there aren't any stations to get off at. So you've no idea how you're going to get off it, which I suppose that would almost certainly put people off taking it, wouldn't it? If I put it in those terms. So I'm saying don't discount it, but go into it with your eyes open. And obviously try not to take it long term if you possibly can.
Thank you. I think that's great advice, and really balanced, which is important where medication is concerned, because views on this really are strong and often quite polarized too. David, was there anything else that you think we should cover?
In terms of, I think I have had a good go at coming off medication, and I will try again. I've tried the tapering it down, and I've tried the reducing it sort of more quickly. And I would just love there to be some decent kind of advice, and some maybe there are some forums out there where people really discuss what works for them, because you're kind of making it up as you go along, you know. People do say taper it, don't go cold turkey, but how do you taper it? And I really appreciate what you've done in terms of the petition. I think that's great, you know, that to point out that this is not made easy. You know, cutting pills is not a thing. So you end up taking them kind of every other day or something like that, you know, and it's just, it doesn't work. So
it's very hit and miss, isn't it? And as you said yourself, for people who are sensitive, that hit and miss approach can make that experience far more difficult than it need be.
Well, I think, you know, in the same way that the pharmaceutical companies only publish or their paid researchers only publish the research that gives the results that they want, you know, you get all these unpublished trials. I think they should be under pressure to do some proper trials about withdrawal from. When have you ever been asked to be involved in a trial about withdrawal? When has anyone ever been asked? I don't think it's been done. So, but I think they should be obliged to give very good evidence-based advice on how you withdraw from antidepressant medication.
I agree completely, and it seems strange that we're in a situation where people who are dependent on alcohol or nicotine can access support services that, in many cases, are part funded by the alcohol or tobacco industries. And yet, for those dependent on prescription drugs, there isn't anywhere really that you can easily access to get help, support, and guidance in how to withdraw safely while reducing withdrawal effects to a minimum.
A support group of people, because, you know, from my point of view, what has tended to happen is I have successfully withdrawn to a point, then I become depressed and I maybe tough it out for that week, 10 days when I'm feeling awful, and then I feel okay again, and then it happens again and I think I become depressed again. I think, hang on a minute, I'm not gonna take the chance that it's the withdrawal. I don't know that it's the lack of medication that's making me depressed. It's probably making me more vulnerable, but it's having that I guess, you know, it's courage, it's support, it's all sorts of things to go through that really difficult time and think, well, I'm not going to start taking the medication again. You know, I was looking at my data, I've got down to zero, yeah, and been at zero for, you know, a month or longer at times. And then, you know, it's getting through that stage. Mm. I may become depressed, but maybe I won't become depressed in the long run any more than I would have done if I was taking medication. Who knows? Difficult to tell.
I think what's really good about your approach to it is that you accept that it's a very changeable picture and you have a broad goal in mind, but you're not really stressed about a certain date or stopping within a fixed time period. I think that approach is really healthy.
Yeah. There are enough targets and deadlines in life without setting yourself anymore, and particularly not in this area, because it is, we're talking about a human mind here, aren't we? And frankly, nobody's got a clue. No matter how many books you read, they all kind of conclude we don't really know why this happens or what it is. So,
thank you, David. And it's important to me that we cover a range of views on this. And I know there are people out there who feel they owe their lives to being on the medication and that they feel they can engage in life while on the drugs. If that's what works for them, fantastic.
Well, I'll add to that list then, because I've no idea if I would be alive and thriving without antidepressant medication. And, you know, and there's a good chance I wouldn't be.
David, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk with you today.
I'm really interested in all the stuff you're doing, so I will keep in touch with what you're doing, and hopefully we can speak again at some point. Best of luck with everything.
Well, it was really interesting to talk with David about his experiences and also to appreciate that there are many who have a healthy relationship with the idea of medication-centered support for mental health difficulties. It's important to remember that there are a wide range of views on this issue, and I'm very grateful to David for being so honest and open with me.
Feedback.
Thank you so much for getting in touch and giving me your feedback and comments. Also, I wanted to let you know about a fantastic opportunity to hear Olga Runciman host a Mad in America webinar on antipsychotic drug withdrawal. This will be held on Wednesday the 7th of June at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time and 7 p.m. in the UK. Olga is a psychologist in private practice in Denmark who specializes in psychosis. Olga is a co-founder of the Danish Hearing Voices Network and the new International Institute for Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. She views mental distress from a post-psychiatric viewpoint. The webinar will be limited to 200 participants and the cost is $20. To register, visit the Mad in America website at madinamerica.com. And just to say also that if you're struggling with withdrawal yourself, you can visit my website, jfmoore.co.uk, where there are links to information that you might find useful.
Please do not increase, decrease, or stop your psychoactive prescription medication without the advice and support of a medical or mental health professional.
Thank you so much for listening. Please come back next week for another episode. And until next time, take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal. Come back next week for more news and views. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and subscribe in iTunes.